We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken. And on today's episode, I will be reviewing the action comedy Tropic Thunder. But before I get into that, I'd just like to say that I hope you all had a, if you celebrated, that is, I hope you all had a great 4th of July and a great past couple of weeks. If you remember in my last episode, my last review, which was of Sleep Token's latest album, Take Me Back to Eden, I said that I was going to take a week off, so I took last week off. So, yeah, there was no new episode last week. But I hope you all had a great couple weeks since I've last, you know, uploaded. And, yeah, I had a great, you know, last couple weeks. I didn't really do anything for the 4th. I was going to go see fireworks, but I was binge-watching, or re-binge-watching, I guess I should say, Adventure Time. So I was like, well, you know what, I'm just going to stay in. See how long I can stay awake and watching the show. Get as many episodes in as possible. But I could hear fireworks. People were shooting them off. In hindsight, I would have liked to have gone. But, I mean, it's fine if I miss one fireworks show. I mean, once you've seen one, you've pretty much seen them all, you know. And my birthday was Wednesday, so 2 days ago. It was nice. I went to a seafood restaurant, Fishtails in Flowery Branch. I've never been there, but my stepmom recommended it, and me and my dad went. And it was good. I liked it. I had a... it was this seafood bowl that had crab legs, shrimp, Cajun sausage, blackened corn. Well, not blackened corn, but it was like a little corn cob that was grilled. Grilled corn on the cob. It was good. And garlic red potatoes. So yeah, it was a shit ton of food. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have eaten all of that in one sitting. I didn't feel sick afterwards, but it was a lot of food. But I was like, well, you know what? I think I can do it. I ate it all. It was good, though. I loved it. But yeah, so I'm back to, on tonight's episode, or today's episode, to review the classic cult comedy, Tropic Thunder. It turns 15 years old this year. When I'm uploading this episode, just know that today's not the actual... of course, if you've seen the movie, you probably know, but today's not the actual release date of the movie. Like, it's not the exact date when it came out. It came out on August 13th, 2008. So technically, next month, it'll be officially the 15th anniversary, but, you know, I'm taking August off, you know, in between seasons. So I figured, well, where can I fit this review in on the schedule? I was like, I could do it in September, I could do it a month later, but I figured I might as well just go ahead and review it. So I was like, well, I'll just go ahead and review it early. So, and I didn't have anything scheduled for or planned for this week, so I figured why not just review it early and tonight, you know, or today. So, yeah, and also, well, this movie, like I said, this movie is 15 years old, so... You know, it might seem stupid to, you know, say, go ahead and, you know, say, oh yeah, there are spoilers, or I'm going to be going into spoilers for this movie, but, you know, there's always a chance that anyone listening to the podcast hasn't seen whatever I'm talking about, so, you know, I just figured I might as well go ahead and let you know, even though the movie's a decade and a half old, that I will be going into slight spoilers from the movie. Maybe not every single thing that happens, every plot point, but if you haven't seen the movie and you want to see it, stop the episode right now, go watch it. And trust me, you should watch it. It's a great movie. But if you have seen it, then by all means, please continue. Or if you don't care about spoilers and you're still going to watch it regardless of me giving spoilers, then, you can, yeah, by all means continue. So yeah, Tropic Thunder came out. Was released by Paramount Pictures and DreamWorks on August 13th, 2008. It had a budget of $92 million, and it grossed $195.7 million at the box office, so it did pretty well, considering that it was an action comedy. Like, it did fairly well for the budget. And it helped, too, that the budget wasn't, like, $200, $250 million, like some of the latest blockbusters, some of the latest movies that have come out this past month, you know, that have come out in June, that have not made their money back at all whatsoever. So, you know, I mean, that's the key, really, to any good movie, is that if you keep the budget small, I mean, don't keep it too small, but, like, you know, don't make the movie, make sure your movie doesn't look cheap, but, like, if you keep the budget small enough, chances are, and if your movie's good, then chances are you're going to make over your budget back. You know, you're going to make bank. But, you know, these past few movies that have come out this past month haven't been, except for Across the Spider-Verse, which made twice over, so far it's made twice, at the box office has made twice as much as its predecessor did. It's made twice as much as Into the Spider-Verse did. And it's still kicking ass at the box office. Meanwhile, The Flash and Indiana Jones 5 and Elemental and Transformers, Rise of the Beasts haven't been making that much back. I went off on a little tangent there. But, you know, but yeah, so key to any good movie is keep a relatively low budget if you can, or don't get too crazy with the budget, you know, and you can make your money back. And they made their money back. They and then some. And the movie was directed by Ben Stiller, and it stars Ben Stiller. And basically, the movie is about these five actors who are filming a Vietnam War movie, and which is called Tropic Thunder. And the movie that they're filming is based on a book also called Tropic Thunder. And the guy who wrote the book is Sergeant Four-Leaf Tayback, played by Nick Nolte. And he's basically overseeing the whole production of the movie. And him, you know, it's him and Damien Cockburn, who's the director, you know, are trying to get this thing filmed. But unfortunately, whether it's due to the stuck-up nature of some of the actors or their inability to cry during a certain scene, or in one of their cases, a drug problem, and also the fact that the director himself is kind of an inexperienced, director, you know, who can't really kind of corral the actors up, you know, and can't actually get them to focus, you know, he can't get them all on the same page. You know, basically, it's causing the movie to be delayed a month behind schedule, you know, despite the fact that they've only been filming for 5 days. Like, they're already a month behind schedule. It's like, okay, well, something needs to change. So the studio executive, like, financing the movie, Les Grossman, he's the producing the movie. He's the studio executive producing the movie. He basically gives Damien an ultimatum. He says, hey, look, get your actors under control and finish filming this movie, or I'm dropping this project. You know, we're cutting it completely. And so later that night, Tayback finds Damien, and he tells him, he's like, hey, look, let's get them away from the hotel and all the other, and the assistants and the, you know, they're stuck up, helpers and all that. Let's get them away from this cozy island lifestyle. Take them deep into the jungle and film this shit guerrilla style. We'll make them feel like they're actually in the movie, and we'll be filming it the whole time. So we'll get, like, some actual fear and emotion and, like, genuine acting from all five of them. Because some of them are, like, really committed to it and are doing a good job, and then others aren't quite as committed or aren't, you know, they can't get the emotions exactly that they want to out of them for specific scenes. So you know, they're like, yeah, let's do it. And they fly them out. Unfortunately, though, Tayback takes the helicopter, because they were gonna set up some explosions. So him and Cody, the pyrotechnics expert, fly the helicopter, and, you know, they're waiting back, like, a couple miles back on another hill. But Damien's like, okay, he explains to them what's going on, but unfortunately he steps on a landmine that they didn't know was planted there. He blows up, and the five of them you know, at first think they're still filming the movie, but then they realize that, oh no, wait, there are actual soldiers out here that are trying to kill us. And it's like, they're Vietnamese heroin dealers. They're like, yeah, soldiers. They have a POW camp that they end up taking the main guy, Tug, played by Ben Stiller. They end up taking him to. But before they get separated, they all five slowly start to realize that, oh no, wait, this is actually real. Like, there are, you know, at first they think the soldiers are actors, you know, from the movie that they're filming, but they're like, no, these are actual soldiers. We're gonna die if we don't, you know, figure out how to get back home, you know, finish filming the movie. Yeah, if we don't get back home, or if we die out here, yeah, we can't get back home and finish this movie. Let's kind of fight our way out of here. And so they're basically forced to live through the movie that they were acting through, that they were filming. And yeah, I just think, like, when I first saw the movie, which I want to say it was, like, I believe 2-3 years ago, when I first saw the movie, now I bought it and watched it because I had heard some great things about the movie. And, you know, I like Ben Stiller and Robert Downey Jr. and Jack Black. So I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a good cast. So I watched it and I loved it. But before I even watched it, just hearing the premise alone, I was like, oh, well, this is a hilarious premise for a comedy. Like, it's a bunch of actors having to live through a movie that they were filming, a Vietnam War movie, like action movie, no less, you know. And I was like, oh, that's a fantastic, funny as shit premise. And on top of that, I mean, not only is the premise good for a comedy, but it's also got some pretty good action for it being an action comedy. The acting from everyone's great. It's a star-studded cast. I mean, you got Ben Stiller as Tug. You got Robert Downey Jr. as Kirk Lazarus. Ben Stiller, yeah, Tug Speedman. Robert Downey Jr. as Kirk Lazarus. Jack Black was Jeff Portnoy. You have Jay Baruchel. I always butcher his last name. I think it's Baruchel. But yeah, he's a friend of Seth Rogen's. He's Kevin Sandusky. And then you have Brandon T. Jackson as Al Pacino. And that, you know, those are your main five, you know, actors that are filming the movie. You know, Tug is playing Sergeant Four-Leaf Tayback in the movie. And of course, Nick Nolte's playing the actual Four-Leaf Tayback, who wrote the book that is based on the movie they're filming is based on. And but yeah, he plays him, and then the four of them are playing Tayback's war buddies. And but of course, you know, not only do you have the five of them who are great, like the dynamic between all five of them is great, but you also have Steve Coogan, who dies pretty early on in the movie. In fact, he's like the only one to die, like, you know, despite it being like them kind of being an actual like war type situation, you know, with like dangerous people with guns, or dangerous soldiers with guns. He's the only one that dies, and it's completely by accident. Like, he steps on a landmine that none of them knew was placed where it was, and he just explodes. And there's a great line too, where, cause at first they're all confused. They're like, what just happened? And Tug, being the kind of dumbass he is, he's like, oh, okay, no, guys, he's just trying to, he's trying to get the best acting that he can out of us. He's faking this. He didn't die. This is a prop head. He picks up the head. He's like, this is a prop head. It's corn syrup. And then he like licks the neck hole. He like licks the neck hole. Like he takes his finger, wipes some blood onto his finger, licks it. And he's like, it's just corn syrup. And then he licks it. And he's like, and he see his face kind of wince. He's like, it's warm blood flavored corn syrup. And, I mean, eventually he figures it out that this isn't actually part of the movie, but he's like the last one to figure it out. All the other four are like, you know, not too long after they see Damien explode, they're like, yeah, okay, this is actually happening. But yeah, I mean, not only are the five of them great, Nick Nolte is great as Four-Leaf Tayback. We find out that he wasn't actually in Vietnam. Like, he didn't actually go on the mission he said he did. His memoir was fake. And him actually having lost both his hands and having replaced them with hooks, that's fake too. We find out that he actually still has his hands, and he was actually only in the Coast Guard, and he was a janitor in the Coast Guard, so he didn't even actually go on the battlefield in Vietnam, which is pretty funny, that reveal. But yeah, you've got him, Steve Coogan is the director, Damien, Danny McBride is Cody, the explosions expert and the pilot, and but yeah, he's a pyromaniac. And there's some great there's a funny exchange where Four Leaf is talking about, or he's telling Tayback, he's like, look, I nearly blinded Jamie Lee Curtis on Freaky Friday. I can't have anyone thinking I killed the director, you know, when they find out Damien exploded, which is pretty funny. But you've got Brandon Suhu plays Tran. He's the 12-year-old leader of the Flaming Dragon Gang, which are basically the gang of soldiers and heroin dealers that kidnap Tug, you know, and that the five of them have to fight off, you know, in order to survive and get back home. And it was actually, I believe it was his first movie, because in the credits, it says, when it's listing everyone's names, when it gets to his name, it says, and introducing Brandon Suhu. And I'm like, oh, okay, so this must be his first movie. And I believe he was 12 at the time, so I'm pretty sure that was his first movie. He does a great job. Because, like, when they're braining Tug through their POW camp, you think that it's going to be some big, badass, buff, strong guy. And, some middle-aged, war-torn, you know, guy. Looks like he's seen some shit, been through some shit. But no, it's like it's a 12-year-old kid. Little 12-year-old boy. But he's, like, so aggressive and so dedicated to the part, it's hilarious. Like, he's such a mean little brat that's, like, you know, deep in the shit. Like, he's, like, an actual soldier, you know, and, and him just, like, whipping the shit out of Tug, and, like, he's like, we are Flaming Dragon, you know, it's great. But Matthew McConaughey plays Rick. He's Speedman's, he's Tug's, agent. He's great in the movie. Bill Hader as Rob Sloan, or Slom. He's Grossman's assistant. And then you have Tom Cruise as Les Grossman, who's the studio executive basically backing the, or executive producing the movie. And when I first watched it, it took me about halfway through the movie to realize that that was actually Tom Cruise. Because he's got all this makeup on, and he's, like, so aggressive with the role. I'm like, this doesn't seem like, or, you know, it didn't feel like a role Tom Cruise would normally play. It's just, like, this very aggressive asshole of a studio executive who's funny. I mean, like, he's funny, but he is an asshole. Like, he's always yelling at people and shit, or every time we see him in the movie. Whether it's, you know, whether he's yelling at Damien for, you know, not for the movie being delayed a month, you know, having been delayed a month, you know, or the production of it, or he's yelling at the Flaming Dragon Gang when they call him later and tell him, hey, we've got Tug Speedman. He's great. And but yeah, because like he's got all this makeup on, he's got a bald head, he's got very hairy arms, he's got like a fat suit on, I guess he's kind of got like rubber makeup on his hands, because his hands look like way bigger than they normally do, he's got an unbuttoned shirt, he's got like his shirt buttoned down, and he's got a very hairy chest, a gold chain, suspenders, he's got this beard and these black thick rimmed glasses, like small but they're still like very thick rimmed, and it's just the look of the character is great. And he does a great job. I guess because he doesn't normally play an asshole in movies. I mean, usually he's like a more sympathetic character because, you know, or a more charismatic character, because Tom Cruise is very charismatic, you know, seemingly, you know, from what everyone knows of him, you know, kind, nice guy, you know. So to see him play an asshole, and also the fact that he had all the makeup on, is probably why I didn't recognize him, because it's not typically a role he would play, but he does such a great job in it. And just the shit that comes out of his mouth is hilarious whenever he's yelling at people. But yeah, I mean, the cast is stacked. And not only that, but like there's a bunch of cameos from people and from other actors too. Like we get Tobey Maguire in the opening, who he doesn't talk, but he has a little cameo. We get John Voight at the end when they're waiting to see who's going to win the Oscar for who's going to win the Oscar for. Or, I mean, not the Oscar, but the who's going to win the Academy Award for, like, Movie of the Year. And, you get him, you get, like I said, Maria Menounos, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Jason Bateman. And, again, a lot of these are non-speaking cameos, you know. But still, it's, like, cool that they got all these cameos in the movie along with the again, already stacked cast that they have, you know. And it was... not only is the story and the acting great and the cast stacked and fantastic, the dialogue's great too. Like the dynamic between the five actors is great. And another thing I love the movie too is how it kind of satirizes like the nature of Hollywood. It kind of in a way, I mean, not exactly like Barry did, but kind of like how Barry did, where I mean, even though it's a show, you know, it was a comedy too, and it kind of also, despite being an action, dramatic action show, it was also a comedic show that kind of satirized and poked fun at Hollywood and actors in general. And this movie does a lot of that too. In fact, I said earlier the opening scene was us, you know, being thrown into them filming the movie. Like, you know, that's technically. The first scene we actually see is a bunch of trailers, like fake trailers, before we get to the actual movie. And I can only imagine people's reactions when they first watched this in theaters, because they were probably thinking, what the hell is this? Like, I bet there were some people that actually legitimately thought these were real movies up to a point. Like, by the time you get halfway through that second trailer, you're like, okay, well, no, wait, that's Jack Black. That's not Jeff Portnoy, whoever the hell that is. You know, there's no Jeff Portnoy. But no, they're great because not only are they, you know, poking fun at, like, the types of genres of movies that, you know, you see that, you know, the Hollywood makes and that you see in the, you know, that are released. And, you know, not only that, but you also, it also cleverly sets up, well, except for Kevin, but other than Kevin, it cleverly sets up the other four, you know, our main characters. Like the first trailer, well, technically it's a commercial, but the first commercial we get is Al Pacino, who is promoting his booty sweat energy drinks and bust a nut bars. and you know, and then we get Tug Speedman, who is promoting we get a trailer for his latest movie, Scorcher 6 Global Meltdown. And then we get Jeff Portnoy in The Fatties Fart 2. And then the final trailer is Kirk Lazarus in Satan's Alley. But all four of the commercial and those three trailers perfectly set up who these four characters are. Before they even get into, like, the news exposition, courtesy of Maria Menounos, you know, like 15, 20 minutes later, you know, or like 10, 15 minutes later. But yeah, like, it sets up that, yeah, Al Pacino is this rapper who, you know, like, the main reason he got into the movie, or one reason he got into, wanted to play in the movie was because he was trying to promote his booty sweat energy drinks, but also he because one of the actors, Kirk, got into the movie, and he was pretending to be a black man, or a black Tabak's soldier friends, or what, his one of his war friends who happened to be black, and he's like, well, they gave the the actual black part to a guy who's white. And so that, you know, he's got like two reasons for being in the movie. But then you got Tug, who's kind of like the Vin Diesel. You know, he's the action hero who's, or the Arnold Schwarzenegger. But, you know, he's like the action hero who everyone loves. But lately his film franchise has been kind of like dying in popularity. Like his most popular film franchise has kind of been dying down, you know, becoming less popular, and he's kind of becoming a bit gimmicky, you know, like it's like, okay, we're on the sixth Scorcher movie. Are you kidding me? You know, like, it's like, why do we have six of these? You know, it's like Fast and Furious. It's like, why do we have 10 of these? Or, you know, I'm trying to think of more franchises, but you know, he's like the big action hero, actor. And then you've got, Jeff Portnoy, who's, yeah, Jack Black's character, who, is the comedic actor, who's kind of like the nutty professor, you know, was that Eddie Murphy? I think that was Eddie Murphy. But he's like the Nutty Professor, or the Martin Lawrence from Big Mama's House, or the Madea, where he's like, he's the kind of chubby, quirky comedian who is like playing a fat character, or in this case, multiple fat characters, because his whole movie, The Fatties, is basically him playing every part of this obese family. And he's also a heroin addict, which kind of works and also not works in their favor when they get to the end of the movie and he finds out that, you know, the place they're raiding to get Tug is a heroin place, is, you know, is manufacturing heroin. And then you get Kirk Lazarus, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, who is the method actor. And in fact, he's so method that he underwent a pigmentation or pigment alteration surgery in order to play the Lincoln Osiris, who was Tabak's African American, you know, friend in the war, and I just love that because it's like that's like they're parodying all the types of actors that you see in Hollywood, and you know, whether they're good or bad, it's like I'm not saying that they're all good or bad, but you know, like you see, like these are kind of cliches or these are types of actors that you see in movies, you know, like even to this day, you know, and it's just great, you know, like how they all play off of each other, how they all, you know, bounce off of each other. The dialogue between them is great, especially between Brandon T. Jackson and Robert Downey Jr.'s characters, Al Pacino and Kirk, because Kirk said they set this up early in the movie, but Kirk basically tells, you know, he lets the audience know, or not the audience, but he tells Tug, he's like, hey, look, I don't break character until the DVD commentary. And he stays up until the very end, like when they're, you know, fleeing the POW camp. He stays as the character of Lincoln Osiris throughout the entire movie. Like he's talking in that hammy black, old black voice, like 60s black voice. And the dynamic between him and Al Pacino is great because Alpa keeps like poking fun at him, and you know, and he's like, you're Australian, be Australian, you know, and it's just great. Like they're just some of the best dialogue, some of the best lines in the movie are when the two of them are like at each other's throats, or not really at each other's throats, but like when they're arguing, like, or when Alpa's like, you know, basically telling Kirk he's had enough of his shit, you know, like, you're not a black guy, you're white, snap out of it. And, but yeah, there's just so many great lines in the movie, but especially from Kirk. But yeah, the exchange where they're talking, yeah, the one line I'm thinking of, there's a bunch, but one I'm thinking of where Tug basically separates from the group, because he still thinks, and again, it's not until he's captured that he realizes, oh, this isn't actually part of the movie. We're actually, this is real life. You know, these are actual soldiers that are going to kill us. But he separates from the group, and during their argument, or during Tug and Kirk's argument, Tug uses the phrase, you people, and Kirk says, in his Lincoln Osiris, you know, stereotypical voice, he's like, what do you mean, you people? And then, Alpa like looks up at him. He's like a few feet behind him. He starts walking up to him. He's like, what do you mean, you people? Cause it's like, cause obviously, Lincoln or Kirk was like pretending like, that, because he was so in character, it's almost like he was black. So he was like, he took offense to that phrase, you people, thinking that, you know, Tug was like, oh yeah, no, you people, like you black people, you know, like singling them out, belittling them, you know, being racist. And then Alpa's like, well, wait, you're not actually black, you know, what do you mean, you people? Cause I'm the black one here, or I'm actually the only black one here, you know? So yeah, it's great. There's way many more scenes between the two of them that are of just the two of them back and forth. That's fantastic. But yeah, so, the whole movie is just filled with hilarious lines of dialogue and just, you know, great satirization, great, poking fun at, you know, the inner workings of Hollywood. I'm trying to think of what else to say. The soundtrack's really good. They've got a really good soundtrack with like a lot of good rock songs, like some classic rock songs. Like you've got Sympathy for the Devil and Run Through the Jungle by the Rolling Stones and Creedence Clearwater Revival. But then you've also got some like pop punk, punk rock songs. What is the soundtrack? You've got some, you've got a Come On, Feel the Noise, Name of the Game, let's see, oh, you've got You Can't Touch This, you know, like some old school hip hop, old school rap, and then you've got, at the very end, which is one of the, best scenes in the movie, is the, final scene. We get, after Les Grossman, he finishes watching the Academy Awards, his assistant, Bill Hader's character, Sloan, leaves the room and he turns on the stereo, he's got this little remote, turns the music on, and he starts dancing to Get Back by Ludacris while the credits are playing. And we just get to see, we just have Tom Cruise in this fat suit and bald head and these big ass, hairy ass arms and knuckles and, you know, just the whole costume, just him dancing, to get to this rap song. And while the credits are playing and we get to see like the, you know, the actors and we get him dancing interspersed with scenes of the characters from the movie, you know, and like, and we get to like, they show a little scene, they freeze frame the image and then the name pops out from the side or from underneath them. And, which I thought the credits were like really cool, the way they were stylized, like the very bright visuals, like every time they pause, like it was like the background, like they, like it was a still image of the actors, but then like the backgrounds were like very colorful and poppy, you know, like, it almost looked like a punk rock poster in a way. I don't know. I mean, which I guess is kind of a weird thing to describe it as, considering that, or compare it to. It's a weird thing to compare it to, considering that the song playing is a rap song, but it almost looks like a comic book panel, you know, where like, you know, you like, you'd see Batman like punch, like, especially in the old Adam West show, you'd see him like punch a goon or, you know, punch the Joker or the Riddler or one of their henchmen or, you know, and you would see the jagged, thought bubble or the jagged action bubble, you know, pop up, pow, wham, kazam, you know, shit like that. You know, it kind of looks like that, and it looks really cool the way the credits are stylized. But yeah. Oh, and also I didn't know this. apparently, Tom Cruise reprised the role of Les Grossman for the 2010 MTV Movie Awards. A spinoff film centering on him was announced in 2010. Oh shit. Okay. Nice. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Okay, I'm looking forward to this. Okay, a script has been written by Michael Bacall. In 2012, Bacall said the film will explore the origin of Grossman's anger issues. As of last year, as of 2022, Cruise and frequent collaborator Christopher McQuarrie, I believe I'm pronouncing his name right, are developing the spinoff, though it is not clear whether Grossman will be the protagonist or a supporting character. Okay, well, you know what? That's okay. He'll be kind of a bigger character than he was in the movie, and maybe he'll be the main character. But still, that's cool. Okay, so, I wonder. I guess maybe they were just both doing other things at the time. I was going to say, I wonder why it took them this long to get around to making the Les Grossman movie. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Because, like, he was, and the movie is filled with, like, again, like I said, filled with great dialogue, great music, a great plot, and fantastic acting from everyone. But, like, his character is, like, the cherry on top of an already perfect Sunday. Like, you know, the movie in itself is, like, a near-perfect comedy, near-perfect movie. And then, like, he's just the cherry on top of the vanilla and chocolate, like, the Neapolitan Sunday, you know, like, or whatever Sunday you prefer. You know, it's, like, the best Sunday you can think of with the best cherry just right on top, you know? And, but yeah, it was great. And, oh, and then also, yeah, I forgot to mention, yeah. And, to round out the five main characters, Kevin, because he's the only one that's not, like, shown in the trailers or the fake trailers or the commercial, before the actual movie begins, you know, like, I mean, technically those are part of the movie, but they're not of the movie, you know, they're supposed to be like fake, you know, it's like, oh yeah, it's supposed to be, these are the trailers before the movie. But he is basically a, he's not an amateur, but he's kind of like he's a novice actor. And it's there's a funny exchange of dialogue where they're trying to figure out how to get Tug out of the POW camp. And, he finds out that he's not only the only one of the five of them that's read the book that the movie they're in is based on. He's not only is he the only one that's read the book Tropic Thunder, he's also the only one that's read the script. None of the other four have even read the script. And he's just like looking at them. He's like, when he finds out they haven't read the book, he's like, okay, well, you guys have at least read the script, right? And then he just looks around at all of them and they're all just like, were we supposed to? And he's like, you guys didn't read the script either. And there's another funny exchange of dialogue. There's one with, and Kirk says, I don't read the script. Script reads me. And then Kevin's like, what the hell does that even mean? That was a great scene. So he's like, he's the one most dedicated to the, like, he's not even like the big main actor. I mean, he's like one of the main five, but like, he's not the, of the ones hired for the movie, you know, he's like, a smaller supporting role in a way of the main five, you know, like, he's not the action hero. He's not the comedic star. He's not the method actor, you know, but he knows his shit, but he's the only one who knows his shit. 'Cause the others didn't even bother to read the book or the script. And it's just, it's great. And he also, and not only that, but to show even more how dedicated he is to the role, he even attended the assigned boot camp. Cause like they set it up to where it's like, oh yeah, if you want to, you can go to this boot camp to like further prepare for the role of, you know, this Vietnamese soldier you're going to be playing. And he's the only one that did that shit. it's fantastic. I'm trying to think of what else to say. Oh yeah, also I do love how the end of the movie mirrors the beginning of the movie, because in that opening scene, again after the trailers, in the opening scene where they're where we see, you know, the five of them, like, and I guess it's towards the end of the movie maybe, or it's maybe the final scene that they're that's going to be in the movie. Like, obviously, you know, movies in real life, they don't shoot them in order. They just shoot them whichever scene is convenient for them to shoot at, they shoot that scene first. Especially if like they're on a time crunch for like the location they're in. Like, you know, if they're pressed for time and they're in a location that, you know, they obviously don't have a lot of time with, they're going to shoot those scenes first, whether they take place in the middle of the movie or the end or the beginning. You know, they're like, we're just going to shoot what we need to now. And then we'll obviously, when we're editing it all together, we'll put it in order, you know. But we get that opening scene where they're leaving in a helicopter and Tug's character, like, they're, you know, the plane's about to get blown up by a grenade, and he pushes the grenade out of the way and gets his hands blown up. And then towards the end of the movie, they're all about to leave in a helicopter, and they're being chased by the soldiers, or by the Flaming Dragon gang, Tran. Yeah, sorry, I forgot his name for a second. By Tran and, you know, the gang, the Flaming Dragon gang. And, you know, there's a scene where, yeah, Tug and Kirk, you know, are, you know, like, Tug ends up crying because he's like, man, I thought I could get through to them. You know, I thought we were actually bonding, you know, and I can't feel my legs, you know. And it turns out they're just in a puddle. But that whole conflict he had in the beginning where he couldn't cry, in that moment, Kirk points out, hey, you're crying, you know. You actually got some emotion out of you, you know. But that was cool how their ending to the movie, like how it ends for them, you know. It's like, oh, they get to, it mirrors how the opening was, you know, how we started off with them filming a fake war movie, and then we end with them at the end about to leave this actual war that they stumbled into. Or this warlike circumstance misadventure that they ended up stumbling into. And I love kind of how over the top it gets with the action at the end. I mean, not so over the top that it's unbelievable, but it, you know, it borders on, you know, it walks a fine line between, you know, being believable you know, like, oh, okay, yeah, no, this is a little over the top, but, you know, but it does a good job. Like Rick, when he finds out that Les Grossman isn't gonna go save, you know, he finds out that Tug has, you know, been kidnapped by terrorists, you know, the Flaming Dragon gang. He goes to Rick, or he goes to Les and tells him, and he basically says, he's like, hey, look, we need to go save him. And he's like, no, we don't negotiate with terrorists. So when they're all about to leave, and they're on the helicopter, Rick just shows up out of nowhere in the jungle, clothes like tattered and torn. He's got like stubble on his face. He's like, hey, I got the TiVo for you, buddy. And like, cause like, there was this whole thing where, they hadn't set up TiVo for him. And it was stated in Tug's contract that they were supposed to have TiVo, on set for him. So like he can record his shows and whatnot. But yeah. And Tran's about to, like in the beginning of the movie, he's about to blow up, or like the opening scene of the movie when they're filming the movie, he's about to blow up the helicopter, and and this is where like the unbelievable kind of part comes in. He shoots the missile, he shoots the bazooka, the missile's about to hit the helicopter, but Rick, and his big brain energy, he throws the TiVo in the path of the missile, and it blows up the missile, and like just, and the impact from the explosion, it like pushes the helicopter away, like, or, you know, kind of like, you know, not stumble, it makes it stumble, knocks it down a little bit, but like it does, you know, they don't actually get blown up because he threw the TiVo in the way of the missile. And you know, it's like, okay, that's a little ridiculous. I don't know if that would actually, that probably wouldn't be thick enough or heavy enough to stop, you know, the missile from actually blowing up the helicopter, but obviously it's a, you know, satirical action comedy, so you kind of, you know, it's fine to suspend your disbelief, you know, especially with comedies. Plus it's funny because like the movie they were filming in the beginning was over the top and had a scene, like I said, where Tug basically only got his hands blown off after he pushed a grenade, after he blocked a grenade from hitting the helicopter. So it's like, the movie they were filming was already over the top, and, you know, kind of, you know, you had to suspend your disbelief with that, you know. So it's like, I like how they kind of parodied and mirrored the beginning of the movie with the end of the movie, and basically kind of ended the movie with an even more over the top suspension of disbelief scene, you know, action scene. But I guess that's it. Oh yeah, and also I love the dedication they went into with the marketing for the movie, because the marketing campaign included fake websites for three of the main characters, for Jack Black's character, Ben Stiller's character, and Robert Downey Jr.'s character. And and they're fictional films. And they even sold the energy drink Booty Sweat that was advertised in the film. Also, they're... and I love the... there's another thing I love, too. I haven't listened to it yet, but there's a Spotify podcast that is comprised of nothing but DVD commentaries. And there's one for Tropic Thunder. And I listened to, like, maybe the first minute of it. I haven't gone back and finished it yet. But I listened to the first minute of it. And it was, it had Jack Black, Ben Stiller, and Robert Downey Jr. But Robert Downey Jr. was in character. He was playing Kirk Lazarus, playing Lincoln Osiris. Like, you know, he was, so he was playing the character, that his character in the movie was playing. And I thought that was clever because in the movie, when he's talking to Tug, he says, which I mentioned earlier in this review, he said, I don't drop character until the DVD commentary is done. So I love that Robert Downey was that dedicated to the role that he's like, you know what? No, I'm going to do it for the commentary too. I'm going to keep up this voice and this personality, this character until we finish this commentary. Cause I said it and obviously it was probably a joke, but the fact that he went with the joke and became dedicated to the bit, you know, was even funnier. Because at first that was probably just a throwaway line. I don't know if they might not have even intended for him to, or he might not have even intended to actually go through with it. But they probably thought about it and they're like, oh, it'd be funny if you did that. And so the fact that he went with it was great. I don't know. And also, speaking of that, I don't know if you could do this movie today. And on the one hand, that kind of sucks saying that because it was only 15 years ago. But I can kind of see where some people might find it offensive. But really, a lot of people were saying how the movie isn't even that... Like, a lot of people were saying that... a lot of reactions I've seen, people were like, you know, you expect people... Some people might groan at the, you know, Robert Downey Jr. playing a black character. Or playing a character who's playing a black character. You know, like the fact that he's in blackface. And also the fact that Ben Stiller, his character Tug... turns out in universe he played a mentally handicapped farm boy named Simple Jack in a movie called Simple Jack, and you know, some people might be offended, you know, nowadays by Robert Downey in blackface, Robert Downey Jr. in blackface, you know, throughout the whole, pretty much the whole movie, and that the few scenes we get of Tug as Simple Jack, you know. But, I mean, obviously it's a comedy, and it's not supposed to be taken too seriously, and the reactions I've seen of people watching the movie on YouTube, it seems like they are in on the joke. Like, they're not... I haven't really seen that many people be offended or groan or cringe when those scenes pop up, or, you know. So, I mean, but it's all a matter of opinion. I mean, you know, obviously, if some people are, that's their right to be offended. You know, it's you can't really tell someone not to be offended by something. I mean, you can, but... that won't really change that many people's minds, you know. But you know, I mean, I think that it still holds up today, and it's not something that borderline offensive, you know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, but yeah, I mean, it seems like most people still love the movie and still don't really find anything that offensive with you know, the blackface and the mentally handicapped portrayals in the movie. But yeah, no, I mean, I love this movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I just watched it, you know, before I did this review, just to refresh my memory on the movie. And I'm glad I did, because it's made me laugh probably as much as the previous 2-3 times I've watched it. I don't know, I feel like I've watched it 2 or 3 times at least. I mean, my you know, counting my first watch of it and... the every watch up until this point, you know. I feel like it's probably my 3rd or 4th time watching the movie. But, yeah, I laughed just as hard now as I did when I first watched it, and, yeah, I love this movie. And if you haven't seen it, hopefully, I mean, I didn't spoil everything, or I didn't mention everything. There's still a bunch of great lines of dialogue and exchanges between the characters and plot points that I didn't mention. You know, still watch the movie if you haven't, because there's a lot of stuff that I didn't even mention. And yeah, it's just great. The acting's great. Soundtrack, the humor, the dialogue. It's a near perfect comedy, near perfect movie. And yeah, just you won't regret it when you watch it. I promise you'll have a good time. So yeah, I guess that does it for today. Technically, it'll be today's episode because it's as of the time of this recording. Like right now, it's as I'm nearing the end of the episode, it's 2:55. So it'll be today's episode technically. Yeah, that does it for today's episode. I hope you all enjoyed the review. Join me next Friday for my first ranking. I guess technically it's my second. But join me for my next week for my ranking movies episode. I'm going to be ranking Christopher Nolan's movies in celebration and anticipation of his next movie and latest movie, Oppenheimer, releasing on the 21st. I know it might seem stupid to rank them before Oppenheimer comes out, but in my review of Oppenheimer, I will mention somewhere in the review where I'd rank it. But I just figured, I was like, well, you know, because I don't want to have two or three episodes. I don't want to have like three episodes on the week of the 21st. So I figured I'd do the ranking Nolan's movies episode next Friday. And also because, again, like with this week, I didn't really have anything else planned for the week of the 14th. So I figured, well, I'll go ahead and do that episode a week before Oppenheimer comes out. So, that will be next week. I've currently only two movies into his filmography, but you know, I'm going to watch a few more over the weekend, and I should, with any luck, I should finish by Thursday. So, I will see you all next Friday for that episode. As always, I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope you all have a great weekend. And until then, take care.